Ben, why is this a forgotten quest? Why do you think that this has kind of left our collective memories?
Well, in my research, and as I kind of suggest in the book, first of all, they're operating in the big, long shadow of the space program, which is really where everybody's attention is. As you mentioned earlier, we're in competition with the Russians, and there's a lot at stake there. And frankly, it's just a lot easier to watch things that are launching and making big shows on the launch pad and going up into the sky than it is to watch what's going on down in the water. And that's been something that I think the ocean community or people with ocean interests have always dealt with. It was a little harder to show what they were doing. And in fact, at this time, it's even harder to get a decent television image out of deep, murky water than it is today. But mainly the space was where the attention was, and also that's where the money was, and where the money, it kind of goes both ways. Where the money is also where the attention is. And so, as I mentioned earlier, the C-Lab budget was so small that itself made it a less visible or talked about program, despite the efforts of Bond and others to kind of try to draw attention to it, because they realized that if they could get greater public interest in what they were doing, that would probably be a good thing for their funding as well. And that was one reason that Bond was happy to see Jacques Cousteau take up the cause, because Jacques Cousteau was already quite a renowned figure by the early 60s. He'd been on the cover of Time magazine, among other things. And so if Jacques Cousteau said living in the sea was what we were going to do, then that could only be good for the cause. But none of this was as big or well-funded or as headline-grabbing as anything that was going on in space. And you can really see that when you look at the history, as I did, and you can sort of get a sense of more of the nuance of how that was at the time in the book.
So if you don't mind, let's fast forward just a little bit to when C-Lab finally becomes a reality. Where do they do it? Where does C-Lab get set up for the first time?
Well, that first C-Lab 1 I mentioned, the lowest budget of them, gets taken out to the Navy base at Bermuda and then placed offshore about 25 miles at a depth of almost 200 feet. And divers will know that 200 feet is a substantial depth with a variety of complications associated with it, even today. More than just the depth, Dr. Bond was wanting to demonstrate that they could be there for a prolonged period. Now, a dive of 200 feet, even today, might be something you'd do for, 20 minutes or half an hour. And Bond was proposing a three-week stay at that depth in C-Lab 1 off the coast of Bermuda. And they were going to be in reasonably warm and clear water, so they weren't taking on too many challenges at once because they had plenty of prototypes and other variables to deal with. And they wanted to, start a little bit cautiously. So that's off the coast of Bermuda. That's C-Lab 1. That's the summer of 1964. And C-Lab 2, then they up the ante a bit and build a more – the Navy sees the successes of C-Lab 1. It went mostly according to plan. It has its dicey moments, as I describe in the book, but it's enough of a successful demonstration that Bond's able to get a little bit more money, and they build a more refined habitat, as these undersea bases were called C-Lab 2, and they take it off the coast of Southern California this time, and that's going to be about the same depth, just over 200 feet, but it's going to be darker, it's going to be colder, and it's going to start to really test their ability to have people down there and have them thrive and survive for a couple of weeks at a time. And at that point, I should note that the astronaut Scott Carpenter gets involved in the program.
Well, we've got some audio. Can you set up the audio? Because I got to play this.
You want me to set that up?
Yeah. Tell people, because this is a little jarring. Explain what we're going to hear here.
All right. So Scott Carpenter actually finds his way to Bond through Jacques Cousteau through a series of coincidences I describe in the book. And Bond is happy to have this famous astronaut interested in his program and in deep diving. So he brings him in. Carpenter's not an experienced diver, but they figure he's a competent guy. They can train him, and it couldn't hurt to have somebody with the profile of an astronaut who had only just recently been the second American to orbit the Earth, joined the program. So Scott Carpenter will be on C-Lab 2, and as part of their continuing efforts to draw attention to the program, they sometimes try to say, you know, get somebody like Carpenter on the phone with the President of the United States.
Yep.
Now, one slight difficulty is that to breathe and survive and thrive in this environment, they are breathing a very helium-rich atmosphere. So
yeah,
they've got much less nitrogen in the mix and much more helium in the mix than we typically do here when we're just breathing at the surface. And I think people might notice the effect of this in this recording that you have there, where Carpenter is going to get on the phone with President Johnson.
All right, let's listen.
Hello, Adam. And please, would you put the call us and let us know that you are interested in what we're doing?
I know that being 205 feet underwater for 30 days and making the excursion dives that you did has been very valuable to us and advanced our knowledge of how humans can perform under these conditions. And I want you to know that the nation's very proud of you. You're very brave and skillful, and I'm grateful that you've successfully completed this experiment.
Well, thank you very much, sir. On behalf of all the crew and all of those who participated in C-Lab, it's an honor to be a part of the program. And again, we're pleased to know that we're this interested in what we've been doing. I must apologize for the sound of my voice. It's the absolute best I can do in a helium atmosphere.
So Lyndon Johnson at some point believes he's talking to Alvin and the Chipmunks. Is this correct?
Yeah, when you listen to the rest of the conversation, it's clear that Johnson doesn't seem to have a clue what Carpenter's saying, but is just sort of following the script of, you know, the conventional script of congratulating the hero who's done something great for the nation. And Carpenter is trying to get some plugs in for, you know, some of the other guys that are down there with him. But Johnson is having a hell of a time understanding him. And as your listener is probably having a bit of a hell of a time understanding him, too. And that was just one of the many challenges that the C-Lab Aquanauts faced, among many others, was just understanding each other. Sometimes they'd just get out a little blackboard and write a note to each other because they would get so frustrated.
Yep.
Trying to understand what, especially if there was something rather complex to discuss. You can only imagine in that voice how things would get a little bit muddled. Although I'm told that four-letter words are especially easy to understand in a helium atmosphere.
I can imagine. Read the whole story.
That's a whole other thing.
That's so funny. Read the entire story. Ben Halworth has put together a great book called C-Lab, America's Forgotten Quest to Live and Work on the Ocean Floor. Ben, it was great meeting you. Thank you so much, and good luck with this book.
Thanks. Sure. Lots more information at my website, benhalworth.com, and glad to hear from people as well.
And that's spelled, for those of you who don't know, benhellworth.com. Thank you, Ben. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Bill. You too. Take care.
Stick around, everyone. We have a lot more ahead. It's WGN.
The schnitzel's going to hit the fan. That would be you, and it's a good thing at the Hofbrauhaus in Rosemont. Come on out. Everybody's welcome between 3 and 7.
My bad.
If you're hesitant to let your teen date, you may be on to something. Brian Noonan, who's in for Mike McConnell, explains why. This takes place at 11:05 this morning. Make sure you're listening. Right now you're listening to The Voice of Chicago.